Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome in to another edition of the Jayhawk Talk Podcast. It is episode 59 or something like that. Might be 60. Not really sure at this point. We're here to talk to you about some KU football.
Do we have to?
We have to. I'm Kevin.
I'm Andrew.
As always, there's Andrew.
I'll introduce myself here.
Okay.
Convince me. Do we have to talk about KU football?
Yeah. We're gonna talk about KU football because, Andrew, we have another game coming up this Saturday, and if we win that game, we're 2-1. Okay.
Okay.
And well, all you gotta do is win four more games to be bowl eligible. There's a bunch of games left.
We need to talk about our delusions a little bit later. If you listen to the last podcast, because I've come to the conclusion that we are absolutely delusional. But let's start off here. I've got a quick history lesson with a question attached to it. Okay. The history lesson is this. In the year 1920, Kevin, our football coach, KU football, was coached by none other than Bog Allen. He coached the Jayhawks for 1 year. He coached 8 games and went a respectable, a gentleman's 5-2-1, 3-2 in the conference. So he has the same amount of wins as Charlie Weiss does through three years. But I was looking at this and it made me think, and I'm asking this as an honest question, not a joke, not taking this lightly or trying to be funny, but would Bill Self have a better record than Charlie Weiss if he was the football coach this year? And let's just give a little bit more detail to it. Let's say he took over last December.
Wow.
Would he get to hire a staff? He would get to do the whole thing. Would he have a better record this season than Charlie Weiss?
I don't think he would have a worse record. I think with a $2.1 million assistant coach budget, Bill Self would be able to go out and find some football minds. I think it's pretty, I guess the way I approach this, Andrew, is replacement level coach over Charlie Weiss. You talk about like war and baseball, wins above replacement. I think just about anything at this point would have to be better than what we've had. And even if it's a basketball coach. I think truly, honestly, let's get the volleyball coach in too. Maybe he can do something. They've been winning a little bit.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I think it's dangerous. It's really dangerous to adopt the mindset of it can't be worse than we're having, because we said that for a couple of years with Turner Gill, and Kevin, I think it's gotten worse.
It might have.
So by saying that now, I'm not sure we want to ask that question, because the answer may be yes. You know, that may be an answer that could happen. But I think that that's an answer that we need to discuss throughout this entire podcast is, have we hit rock bottom? Is this rock bottom? I mean, I wasn't going to games, you know, in the 2000 era.
I was.
Because I wasn't around. But, I mean, there could be an argument, and certainly in the 80s, there could be an argument, but we're definitely in contention with a lot of these eras as being, you know, the worst time to be a KU football fan. But that's okay. We're maybe going to put a positive spin on this a little bit. But Kevin, give us a rundown. What are we going to talk about today?
All right. Unfortunately, we are going to talk about the Duke game just a little bit. A lot of people, I think, Andrew, are talking about what it's going to take for Charlie Weiss to be our coach next year. Not necessarily saying, is he going to be retained, but a lot of people are thinking that's almost getting close to decided. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and his contract. We're going to have our good buddy, our pal, our friend of the podcast, Rustin Dodd on of the Kansas City Star, to talk a little bit about what he's seeing from the program, a little bit better insider track than you and I from the sidelines. And then we're also going to talk a little Big 12, and we're going to preview that Central Michigan game. But Andrew, first off, let's get into this Duke game. And I want to lead with this, a quote from a head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks. He said, leading up to the game, we think this is a good matchup for us. Their strengths play into our strengths. Their weaknesses play into our weaknesses. I think we have a legitimate chance.
And then what was the chance when we rolled the dice? How did the dice come up?
41-3. That was the
41-3.
Yeah. Okay. Here's an honest question for you. If we had played SEMO on Saturday instead of Duke, we would have lost, right?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
So what happened? We got to talk about it. Cause I'm still confused about what exactly happened. I mean, there's 25,000 people in the stadium. They're million yards away from the stadium. They got that track around the stadium. We're not even going to get into that. It just looked like one team didn't show up. And then when things got bad, it just got worse. And whew, that was really hard to watch. And any KU football fan that started the game and finished the game, and God, those poor souls that made the trip out to Tobacco Road to watch that game, of which there were quite a few KU fans there. Man, I'm sorry. That was frustrating. And
they get really a special merit badge for that, because I don't think that a lot of people finished watching it on TV. Now, I went out to Johnny's to watch the game with a couple folks, and I'm going to be honest with you. It was hard to keep my eyes on the TV. There was a lot of other games going on, and it was just painful to turn my head and watch the game. I mean, and that sucks as a fan. I think that's a terrible thing as a fan, and I did my best. But I'll tell you, if I was involved in some kind of conversation, I think this is by and large true with a lot of people. If you were watching it with a big group, you know, the game wasn't your first priority. You kind of lost interest. And I think a lot of people are losing interest. Now, we'll be out there at games, but man, this is going to spiral out of control if it doesn't get fixed.
Yeah, I think you're right. It really does need to get fixed. Let's talk about some stats from that game. I mean, honestly, Andrew, there's literally not very many stats that were positive. Here's the best I could come up with, though. We won time of possession.
Wonderful.
So that's a stat that obviously means nothing.
That's a tasty stat.
You know, we did talk a little bit about this after the first game, that Mann and Avery looked like they would be able to carry the ball this year. We'd be able to not lose a whole lot from losing those first and second string guys. And I think that, continued in the second game. They both averaged 5.4 yards per carry. They combined for 152 yards. Mann also accounted for 40% of Cozart's overall passing yards on one dump off pass that went for 36 yards in the fourth quarter. A nice little play. And then I don't know, we punted well, I guess that's it. I mean, truly that is it. That's the only positive I could take away.
If you want to be a professional punter, you want to be a punter in the NFL and you want to show what's up, you want to show your skills, there's no place better to go. It's like KU with big men. It's like KU with power forwards. Like, if you want to be a power forward, you should go play KU basketball. If you want to be a punter, you're going to get lots of opportunity.
I like that. Yeah. So there you go.
Punter you.
Yeah, you're right. He did have 8 punts in that game, and he averaged 52 yards, which is that's pretty good. That's really good, with a long of 72. So that's interesting. Good job, Pardula. Let's talk a little bit about Cozart, because I think that was, you know, at least on Twitter and following the game, that seemed to be what everybody was focusing on. And I think for good reason. His stat line, not pretty. 11 for 27 for 89 yards. If you're counting at home, that's a 3.3 yard average that he was tossing the ball. 2 interceptions, no touchdowns. You know, we saw Cummings come in for a little bit. He just was at the end. He was just handing the ball off. Like, it was just a let's get the hell out of here. Let's put Cummings in just to have someone else in the game. It wasn't a let's see what he can do, which I think would have been, I think most KU fans would have maybe appreciated seeing a let's see what he could do. Andrew, what did you think of Cozart's performance, and are you comfortable with him continuing to be trotted out there after that?
No, not comfortable at all. I just don't know what the other options are. Obviously, Michael Cummings is second on the depth chart. And we know what he can do. He's not necessarily that well-rounded quarterback that's going to be a long-term solution by any means, and certainly not in the years going forward with Cozart being a sophomore. But my question to you is that will we get to a point on Saturday where Michael Cummings gets that opportunity, where Cozart is legitimately benched and Cozart has to come in because – you know, it's not just killing time. It's him. He is the quarterback for KU right now. Do you think that'll happen on Saturday?
I don't. I'm still taking the position that they're going to give Cozart every opportunity to be the guy. They obviously chose him in the fall for a reason, stuck with him throughout this game, through obviously all kinds of bad. But he definitely had a really, really bad game, and it was not all protection. You and I had talked about for a long time that they were going to have to design some plays to scheme protection for him. And there were a lot of times, damn it, he had protection and he just took off. And that's what was frustrating. You get hit a couple times as a quarterback and you start thinking that pocket is collapsing a little sooner than it is. And when you get that mentality, it is really tough, very, very tough to play quarterback at any level. And I think he was spooked. And when he got spooked, he ran out of the pocket. A lot of those plays, I went back and watched a little bit thinking that those were design rollouts and bootlegs. No, man, he was scrambling. And he was scrambling in a lot of times in places he didn't have to. And that's what kind of scares you a little bit, because even on those rollouts, he looked bad. I mean, he was not completing passes. He was looking downfield and missing guys in the flat. Tony Pearson a couple times was wide open in the flat. We've got these playmakers. We've got, good running backs who can catch the ball. We've got guys, Harwell and Nigel King, that can catch the ball. We've got a decent tight end, but you can't have any success if you can't get them the ball. And these guys are playmakers. You got to find a way to do it. And even if that pass is 3 freaking yards, just throw the pass 3 yards. And so it's going to be interesting to see what reaction this game is to the last one. I'm still not totally comfortable with the idea of Cozart having the right mentality after what I saw against Duke, but we'll see.
A couple other things before we stop talking about this Duke game. If you want to win a Heisman Trophy, you need to play against KU, because you can put up ungodly numbers. Freshman running back who was not even on their 2-deep running back depth chart ran for 245 yards on 12 carries for 3 touchdowns, which is Madden numbers with a long of 69. Like, they were playing Madden.
That's techno football.
They had all of their stats turned up to 99, and they had, it's like when you play second player and you're that player and you just like back them all off. That's what happened with this guy. All of his touchdowns, I think, were over 30-yard rushes. It's tough. I don't know if there will be another running back this year who will average over 20 yards a carry.
Yeah, that was silly. So,
kind of embarrassing.
And they asked Weiss about it in his post-game press conference, or maybe it was the Tuesday press conference today. I can't remember. But he said something like, one of those was a bounce out play that's tough to defend or whatever. But 3 of them, we had guys in the gap and we just missed. And that can't happen. And so after reviewing the tape, he said that. And so that's frustrating, because, a lot of times, Andrew, those are linebackers. That's who we thought was a strength of this team. Sometimes it's a safety, but, a lot of times it's the linebackers. And it's a little scary. It's if our defense, which we thought was supposed to be halfway decent, at least keep us in games this year, is also quitting, it's going to be a long year.
All right, one more thing before wrap up Duke. You had to have loved this game aesthetically, from like a viewing standpoint, because that track, I bet, just looked beautiful on the screen to you, didn't it?
Yeah.
You just loved it. You loved seeing that track around the field. Oh, yeah. I bet you just loved it.
It was
a
little
late. Loved it.
I hate the track. I like that Duke has a track, though. Although, until we can actually compete with them Whatever, it doesn't count. They are obviously far superior than us in football right now, as is just about every other team. But, Andrew, let's talk a little bit about Charlie Weiss. I think it's fair to say that you and I have not, from the very beginning, really bought into the Charlie Weiss era. When we first started this podcast, that was fresh with Weiss. I think we both were interested, we were intrigued, optimistic to some extent, but not once we started seeing the play on the field. A lot of questions with play calling, a lot of questions with decisions, and I think that has continued. And now I would bet that the entire fan base, if you had a confidence poll right now in old Chuck, I think it'd be pretty negative. Would you agree?
Pretty negative. That should be a thing that the Jayhawk Talk website should do, like a weekly confidence poll.
I don't want to do that. That's too much work. We'll leave that to other blogs.
Would it be over 20%?
I don't think so.
It be over 10%?
Yeah. I think so. I still think there's diehards out there that are, you know, wanting to see it play out a little bit more.
I think you're a little wrong on our classification on what we thought, because I think we've been more favorable than the average bear.
Really?
Yeah. You and I both predicted bowl games these past two.
Well, previews. Sort of.
Well, I mean, we were optimistic. And we were giving the benefit of the doubt. I mean, obviously we're critical because we need things to talk about, and we look at things a little more closely because we do this. But I think that we've had a lot of optimism in there, and you know, taken rays of sunshine and tried to turn them into great balls of fire, but hasn't really been the case. So I mean, we're not there anymore. I think we're both off the wagon.
Oh, I don't know. I think you're right in terms of leading into the season, because everybody, you want to spin a little positive. I mean, that's the time to have some hope. And then you see with the product on the field in the last 3 years, I think we've seen the product on the field in the first couple of games, and really we're ready to turn the page. Okay, so here's a quote from our fearless athletics director. Shane Zinger says, quote, and this is in the preseason, this is before the year, quote, "We need momentum. Let's be clear here. Momentum is wins. Charlie can't tell you. I can't tell you. The players can't tell you how many that is. But I would tell you the players, the coaches, our staff, and fans will know that is as the season progresses. Sorry, I obviously can't type. So in the preseason, our athletics director, who presumably would have some of the authority in deciding whether Charlie Weiss will be around, said he wants to see wins. He didn't give us a number. I'm going to give you a number, Andrew, and you tell me if that will be enough for Charlie Weiss to retain his job in 2015. And that number is 3.
I knew you were going to say that. So that means 2 more wins.
2 more wins. Don't care who it is. You can
hypothetically a Central Michigan and a Big 12 win. Two, definitely not. 4, he probably keeps it. 3 is the cusp.
Okay. Let's talk about his contract, because this is what it really comes down to, in my opinion. And I think a lot of people just assume that if you get 2 or 3 wins, he's gone. But it may not be that easy. You know, this contract was a 5-year contract guaranteed $2.5 million a year. It's very similar to Gill's in that respect, in that there's no buyout. It is literally a fully guaranteed contract. So if we fire him after this year, we owe him $5 million. Similar to Gill, who we owed $6 million when we fired him. This is, of course, in addition to the $3 million buyout that we paid Mangino. And that would, if you added up, 3, 6, that's $9 million plus 5. That would be $14 million we'd be paying coaches for not coaching here anymore in the last 4 years. So that, you know, going to a booster and trying to sell that, man, that's tough. And then saying on top of that, we're going to need another $2.5 or $3 million to bring in our guy. who this time is going to be the guy. This would, of course, be our fourth coach in 4 years. Man, that's tough. That's a tough sell. And so I guess I'm not quite willing to, even if it's a 2-win season, to just say there's no way Charlie will be here. Purely from a monetary perspective, it's just, it's tough sell. It's a really tough sell. Thoughts?
Yeah. Thoughts on that is, I just don't know where the money's going to come from. And I know that there's imaginary boosters out there who are willing to give money, but you got to imagine that those were the folks who were first called 4 years ago and 2 years ago.
And it's also the same ones who are going to be called and have been called about remodeling Memorial Stadium. And if you're getting a call to say, hey, we're going to give you naming rights, we're going to do this, we just, you know, we need a pledge of X million. Are you going to do that? I mean, we've been through four coaches in 5 years and you're already paying three other buyouts. And are you going to have the, I don't know, man. I would be, the first thing I would say is show me something before I'm going to do that. It just seems like dead money. I'd much rather put my name on a, you know, something for KU basketball right now. Can you blame them?
And I think that we also can't be looking exclusively at wins, because if we would have lost that game 21-14, you know, we'd be down, but we wouldn't be this down. Like, we were playing a completely different game than Duke was playing. And I'm not talking about basketball. They were playing football. We were, I don't know what we were playing. We didn't compete. We weren't even close to being on their level of a team who is, you know, not very good. Yeah. So it's tough to look at it purely in terms of wins, but what do you think needs to happen? Like, what is the real issue? How do you think this needs to get resolved? Is there a solution?
I'm putting on my athletics director hat here, Andrew. I think that Zanger needs to, this next time around, and I'm conceding that Charlie Weiss is not the answer. Whoever is the answer, I don't think I necessarily want Zanger to choose it. Last time around, it was a one-man search firm. Remember, it was just him. This time around, I want him to appoint a freaking football czar. I want someone who has so much experience in football, in college football, to come in, make a committee, and put together a plan, Andrew, and not just a plan to hire a coach, but in order for this to really work, in order for KU football to actually not be a total and absolute embarrassment in college football, because that's exactly what it is, they're going to have to change a whole lot of things. They're going to have to change a mindset. They're going to have a vision, a very thoughtful vision, and they're going to have a lot of commitment from people like the chancellor, from administration, from faculty, donors, students. And it really starts and ends with a renovation of Memorial Stadium, which I think for any college football coach they're going to hire, if you're going to go out and you're going to find some up-and-coming assistant coach or some up-and-coming division, you know, double A or whatever coach, if that guy's going to take the job, you approach him and you say, you're going to be the guy, you're going to have this commitment from us, and in your second year as coach, we are going to announce a $140 million renovation to Memorial Stadium that's going to drive fans back to the stadium, excite the people, and you can have that the first thing that, you know, in your first year that you're here, you get to announce that. Otherwise, man, I don't know. I mean, are we just going to tread water with the next guy? Because that's what it feels like. I mean, any thoughts on that?
You know, I think that Shane Zanger fancies himself the football czar anyway. I think that he's the perfect person to lead that. I don't think you need to hire anybody outside, but I definitely like the big picture approach in getting everything kind of coordinated that way, because it's going to be tough to attract someone. I mean, we don't need to talk about names because we may be able to do that next week, depending. But I like the all-encompassing approach, because that might be a little more enticing to bring someone in. But, you know, maybe we're putting the cart before the horse. But let's leave you on this topic with a quote from Lawrence Journal World's Thomas Keegan.
Oh, yes.
This is what he said today. If the KU football team can't snap out of its funk this weekend with a victory against Central Michigan, against a Central Michigan team coming off a 37-point loss and likely coming to town without its best player, It's quite possible today was Weiss's final Tuesday presser. Hard to argue. But we could be having a lot to talk about next week if things go poorly.
There is a legion of fans out there who have a good point, who would argue that appointing an interim coach this year would be easier to transition than to keep a potential lame duck on through the end of the year, allowing him to go out and recruit and having a lot of questions on whether he's sticking around or not. That would be the only reason I think that you would make a move in season. I don't think they're going to make a move in season unless it just absolutely implodes, which is possible. Heck, it's possible. If they lose by 20 points at home to Central Michigan, man, I don't know. There's going to be some pitchforks, I think. Oh, hey, Andrew, what do you say we pause here? We need to get some positive vibes coming back to this. This is getting a little negative. Let's bring our pal Rustin. He's going to bring some real positivity to KU football that, you know, only he does. He's got some really cool things he's working on. I want to get him in here. Let's pause for a second and bring him in. What do you say?
Let's do it.
There used to be a gray and tower alone on the sea.
Right, we are back. We are joined by Rustin Dodd, friend of the podcast, Kansas City star, KU beat reporter. And Rustin, I apologize for this music. We got a follower on Twitter who always, no matter what we put on the podcast for the music, just gives us total shit about how terrible it is. So I'm just going to continue to do terrible songs. Although this song's pretty good.
This is not a terrible song. I think every kid in 1995 owned the Batman
room. I love this song, actually. But hopefully he hates it, which was really my end game. So, Rustin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. What's going on?
Not too much. Are you staying busy here following this KU football team?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that obviously the start of the season has not been... I mean, it's not been promising on the field, but there's something at stake this year, which I think has not quite been there in the last couple of years. So it's made it a little bit more interesting to cover. I feel like there's a little bit more riding on this season, you know, than when a coach is in his first or second year and kind of building. So it's been kind of interesting to see it transpire so far. And obviously the performance at Duke was pretty bad. I mean, I was talking to somebody today about the worst performances of the Weiss era. And I mean, maybe it's unfair, maybe there have been worse, but that Duke game seemed to stand out in terms of its importance in this, you know, the program kind of building, and also, you know, a Duke team that's good, but not, you know, a top 25, top 20 type team. And so, I mean, I was struggling to kind of find couple other games of the Weiss era that were probably as disappointing as that one was.
Yeah, that was definitely disappointing. We've talked a little bit about it on this podcast already, so we don't want to stretch it too far. We're trying to stay positive here. We railed on how bad KU football, the state of it is, for a long time on this podcast. So now we brought you in to be real positive. So here, let's talk about our quarterback, Montel Cozart. And your job is to come in and tell us really positive things about how the outlook of him as our quarterback and what you think that Charlie is thinking after this Duke game.
Well, I think the most positive thing about Montel Cozart is that he's 19 years old. True. And I think, and this may, I've become kind of a big on age the last couple of years when you look at prospects, whether it's NBA or Major League Baseball. I mean, you kind of want to see where, how old they are compared to the guys they're playing against. And I think in college sports, sometimes we lump, you know, everybody in like a 4-year span together because they're all, you know, they're all competing against each other. But I don't know that we pay attention to age enough. And Cozart was starting last year as a 18-year-old who turned 18 in August of his freshman year. I mean, that's about as young as you can be in college as a freshman. So So I think if you're looking positive, I mean, this guy was thrown into a situation because Charlie Weiss and John Reagan thought he was the best guy for the job, the best one to run John Reagan's spread offense. And I still think he's just a young quarterback, and he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have a feel for reading defenses and for moving around a pocket. And he doesn't, you know how to go through progressions. Maybe a guy would if he's, you know, 2 or 3 years into this thing. So I think when you look at his performance, it's statistically it's as bad as Jake Heaps or Dane Chris were in the same offense. But I don't know that it's as, in the long term, I don't know that you can just write off Montel Cozart after a couple of bad performances and say, oh, it's another quarterback bust. I mean, I just don't think that's the case. I mean, I think there's a lot of upside with him, with the way he can move around and his physical tools. You know, the question is he ever going to be accurate enough to be a consistent quarterback and really a consistent weapon? But I don't know. I mean, the guy that I've compared him to, and I don't think this is a good comparison, but L. Roberson at K-State, I mean, he was a hyped recruit. He came in more hyped than Cozart. In his first couple of years, I mean, he could run better. I guess that's the one thing. Cozart seems, you know, not interested in running as much as he probably should. But, I mean, Roberson, if you look at his numbers, he completed 40 or 50% of his passes for his first couple of years at K-State and kind of was in and out of the lineup a little bit. But then, you know, by his senior year, I mean, he was quarterback on a BCS team. So I think if you can imagine that progression, I mean, I think most Kansas fans would be happy. You know, obviously, I don't think they're going to go to a BCS game in 3 years, but just from a mere production standpoint, I think that could maybe be somebody you could look at.
So you had a press conference today. Weiss was there, and I listened to some of it. I caught a few little things. I thought one thing that was interesting was that he said that Harwell is the leader of the offense. Did I catch that right?
He did. I mean, he's a captain, and he's the only offensive captain, unless I'm missing somebody. Ben Heaney, Cassius Sendish, and Nick Harwell are the three captains. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess he would be the one. And I think that's, I mean, this has been a consistent theme, but, you know, for the last 3 years, and not to get off on a tangent, but they've had three captains in the last 3 years who have never played down before they were captains. And I just think little things like that speak to where KU football is as a program. I mean, I think it could speak highly of Nick Harwell that he could come in and work hard enough to command the respect of his teammates. But I think, you know, on a larger picture, that really speaks to where a program is at when you have guys just coming in, sitting a year, not playing a game, and then all of a sudden you're the leader of the offense. I mean, I think that speaks to where they're at. But yeah, the press conference today, the one thing about Charlie Weiss is that he's consistent. I mean, some days he's better than others, but he hardly ever will show his frustration. I mean, he'll have his little moments where he'll react to a question and he's a little frustrated with it. You know, he'll kind of bristle at things that are asked or roll his eyes a bit. But for the most part, I mean, he's there and he's going to say things the way he wants to say them. And he's not going to show you that he's, you know, thinking one thing or another. And I mean, after the game at Duke, he was incredibly calm in the post-game press conference, kind of explaining how everything went bad. I mean, one might say a little bit too calm for somebody that had just lost 41-3. I think today was just another, you know, example of he's, you know, I think he's hoping things turn around, but you don't see a lot of guy with a lot of urgency, or at least you don't see visible urgency, I guess you would say. I mean, I'm sure it's there.
Okay, so I did just see you just tweeted out a story, and this is late breaking, 8 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday night, but hopefully fans will be seeing this throughout the day and into tomorrow. A kind of an interesting little blog piece, and I wanted to ask you about it. Looks like to me, and I'm going to let you explain it, but a fan fired off an email to Shan Zanger about his let's say distaste with the football program at the time, talking about Weiss. And apparently, Shane replied. Talk to me a little bit about this article, because this is pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, this is not some earth-shattering bit of news, but I mean, anybody can go on KUAthletics.com and find the staff directory and find an email listing for Shane Zinger. Now, they don't list his personal email. You're not going to see an S Zinger at KU.edu like they do for some guys. But, you know, you can send one that's going to get vetted by his, assistant and all that kind of stuff. And so, a guy emailed Zinger during the KU game on Saturday in the fourth quarter, just saying, this program, I'm pretty much done with this. And he got a response earlier this afternoon. And, generally you see responses that are pretty formulaic, not a lot of details. And this one was not much different, but I don't have it in front of me, but I think I do. You can read it. But
here was his response to this fan. He says, quote, "We appreciate your input and hope you will continue to support the Kansas Jayhawks." Okay, that's good. It continues, "Please know that we are fully aware of your frustration and we are watching this situation closely. Our team values your support. We hope you stick with us through this challenging time. Thank you and rock chalk, Shan Zinger." I think the two funny parts, and call me crazy, but it's where he says, "Please know that we are fully aware of your frustration. We are watching this situation closely."
Yeah, I think that that's more honest than a form letter back to a fan.
Yeah,
generally is. I mean, it's acknowledging that they know there's a problem, and there's no sense hiding no sense pretending that doesn't exist. And I think it also speaks to the fact that they're honest enough about the fact that they've got a football coach who is not really shown any signs of progress in his 2+ seasons, now third season. And I think, Shane is an athletic director that likes to present an image that, winning is the most important thing. And he will say that. He'll talk about all the other important parts about college athletics, and I know he cares a lot about that kind of stuff, but he will come out and point blank say, winning is the most important thing. That's why we're here. We're here to compete. And I think this is kind of a little bit of a revealing look at he's not the kind of guy that likes to lose. And if KU's going to continue to lose, then I think you're going to see him, continue to look at the situation closely. I mean, what will happen? Who knows? But I think that it's a revealing look at something that obviously is just a form letter that you send to a fan to thank you for caring. But I still think it shows just a little bit of something more than maybe you would get, rather than just maybe a thanks for writing, we'll take it under advisement or something.
Right. Right. So piggybacking on that, I don't want to put you in a position, so tell me to, screw off if you don't want to answer it, but we were talking about this. Is this KU football job, should Weiss not be retained? Is this job right now more or less desirable than it was when Weiss took over?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know. I'd have to think about that more, because on one hand, I think you see the coaching turnover and you see what's happened, and you would have to immediately on instinct say it's less desirable. But that doesn't mean that there won't be people that would want the job that are qualified and good coaching candidates to think about. I don't know how, if you've had two coaches in 5 years, and both of them have failed and been fired, one in 2 years into his contract, and hypothetically one in his third year or after his third year, it'd be hard to say it's more desirable. But I would like to try to make a case to say that it's about the same, but I think that's about as most as you can do.
I think that's fair.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think there's some things that Weiss has done really well. I think he's cleaned up some off-the-field stuff, which is certainly, more desirable for a new coach. He doesn't have to maybe do some of those things. But raise the GPA and all that stuff.
Yeah,
but,
the one thing, and I guess I wasn't thinking of these, and I was thinking more big picture and just of Kansas's football's place in the world. But there might be a case to be made that there's more talent on the roster right now, that somebody might look at Kansas from the outside and say, hey, you know, they've got some players. You know, a lot of those guys are obviously seniors, at least on the roster right now. But they might say, hey, they brought in some guys that are decent players, that are Big 12 caliber players, whereas maybe – you know, 2.5 years ago, there were a lot of coaches that looked at the roster and said, wow, you can't win with that group.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the case, but I guess maybe that is the one case you can make. I don't know if it's true or not, but maybe somebody with a little bit more football acumen than I could, or than me, would think that.
That's fair. Anything else you're working on right now? Any big projects coming up for anything we can tout here to make sure people are checking out?
You know, a couple of things. I mean, right now I think the story of Kansas football is its relevancy and just its future. You know, where is it going? But one thing, and this is just maybe a little bit part of that I've been kind of interested in, is just the attendance at games, which can be kind of a tiresome topic. But you know, Kansas is in a unique place, I think, where they don't have good attendance. They have a problem where fans want to leave at halftime. And partly that reason is because fans want to go drink in the parking lot. Meanwhile, you've got, you know, universities across the country that are starting to sell beer at their football stadiums, which was, you know, previously kind of a taboo thing to do on a college campus, where, well, it's not really taboo anymore. And I'm kind of interested in exploring whether or not KU could one day sell beer at Memorial Stadium. And I don't think the story I'm working on, which should hopefully come out later this week, will answer that question. But I do think it's something worth considering, or at least looking into. I don't want to say I'm actively campaigning for it, because that's not the point. But
we are. Andrew and I are. Andrew is.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are places where, I mean, maybe you can make the case that it makes sense everywhere if you're a certain person. But at KU, where you struggle with attendance, where you really struggle to keep people in the stadium, and you're looking for more revenue. I mean, let's face it, this is 2014, and KU, you know, the KU football program doesn't bring in enough revenue, or as much as, you know, all the other football programs in the Big 12. Why not, you know, do something to spike some revenue? But I mean, I think the KU has looked at it. I mean, I think they look at all this stuff. Have they looked at it seriously? I don't know if I can say that for sure, but I definitely think it's something to look at in the next year or two.
Interesting. Well, we'll definitely watch out for that. Thanks again for coming on. You know, I think last time we've promised you a watch or something, Andrew, is that right?
Something like that. We've got to get something together.
Yeah, I think this time is your fifth time on the podcast. You know, we'll get you like a clock or something.
Is it? Five? I don't think it's five. I think every time I come on, you add another time that I actually.
Well, you know.
Come on. Not numbers.
Counting. I mean, you know, whatever. All right. Well, thanks for coming on for your seventh time, Rustin. We truly appreciate it. We will follow you on Twitter at Rustin Dodd. Make sure you're doing that if you're not already. Rustin is the man. Thank you, my friend. Let's get some beer soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, later on. All right, we are back. Thanks again to Rustin Dodd for joining us, giving some insight to the KU football team. Andrew, what do you think of that?
Let's talk a little bit about something. I want to go back to the response of Shane Zanger.
Yeah.
Let's just chew on some of this. But here's the sentence. Please know that we are fully aware. The one thing we've learned today is that neither you or I can read.
No.
Okay, let's read this again. Please know that we are fully aware of your frustration, and we are watching this situation closely. So... what comes to mind when you hear the phrase, we are watching this situation closely?
The only thing in the sports realm is if someone gets arrested and there's a report about it and they go to the team for a statement and the team doesn't want to say anything. So they say, we are aware and we are watching the situation closely.
Yeah. The first thing that came to my mind is when you approach a politician or someone head of authority, when something terrible happens.
Or like a scandal or something.
There is a German terrorist at the top floor of Nakatomi Plaza. We are aware of the situation. We are watching it closely, you know.
Yeah.
Die hard. Or just anything bad like that, a scandal. This KU football team, you could say, is quite scandalous.
Mm-hmm.
Quite scandalous.
Another thing I learned about Shan Zanger is that he really likes to use semicolons in his responses.
Yeah, semicolons. So
he did use that. Our team values your support, semicolon. We hope you will stick with us through this challenging time. What do you think of that use?
That's a good grammar. That's a correct usage.
Yeah, I'll buy. I'll buy.
I wonder if that makes a big... He puts that much emphasis on semicolons in his daily life, you know. It says a lot about a person.
It does. It definitely does.
All right. Let's close off this podcast with some power rankings.
No one could ever take them down. The power lies on their side.
I can't finish the whole drop. I can't do it. That was too much. Go, go, Power Rankers is back, though.
Didn't we ever make a short one?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
I thought we were just going to do a short one, because the other one we had was a minute long.
Yeah, this one was like 20 seconds long.
Still glorious. Okay, well, anyway. That's fine. I hope you enjoyed it, everybody. Let's talk about some Big 12 Power Rankings. Number one, Oklahoma. They're ranked fourth nationally, beat Tennessee at home, 34-10. What I liked about this game was Bob Stoops talking some smack on the SEC, which makes me kind of a Bob Stoops fan. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll buy that, definitely.
All right, number two is Baylor. They're ranked seven nationally. They played a Friday game away at Buffalo, Turner Gill's old stomping ground, but they stomped Buffalo 63-21. At this point, Baylor can just roll out of bed and get 60 points.
Or 100 against us.
Right. So number three, K-State, ranked number 20th. No game last week. But this game this week on Thursday is being called the biggest game ever played at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. And, of course, that's against Auburn. Kevin, K-State, Auburn, who you got?
My favorite part about this game, and I'll answer that question, was the shirts that came out.
I didn't see this. Tell me.
Man. Oh, you're going to love this. So obviously they're playing Auburn, which is kind of like Alabama. And it's in the same, you know, state, and they have shirts with Bill Snyder on the front, and it's hashtag Roll Snide. What do you think? Get it? Get it?
I get it.
Like
I
Roll Tide?
It works. It works.
Roll I actually kind of liked it. I'm not going to be. I thought it was pretty good. All right. I got Auburn.
You got Auburn? Okay, I think I got Auburn.
There you go.
Big time. Okay, number four, Oklahoma State, ranked 25. They've cracked the top 25. They beat UT San Antonio 43-13, but they lost their quarterback, J.W. Walsh, possibly out for the season after foot surgery. But I don't think they'll miss a beat, because check out the name of their new quarterback.
Oh, man.
Dax Garmon. D-A-X-X, Dax Garmon.
We got a new dark horse for the Big 12 championship right here. I would watch out for any team that has to play someone called Dax Garmon.
Montel Cozart? Destroyer.
No way can they compare to Dax Garmon. Two Dax. X's, that's what really
sells. Two X's, like when this mother's writing on the birth certificate. His name is Dax. Two X's.
Yeah.
All right. So that's number four. Five. I'm putting a West Virginia at number five.
Wow.
So, this is because they have a road win at Maryland, 40-37. And I'm putting them in the category of they're better than we thought they were. Why can't we ever be better? Why can't we ever be better than people think?
That's happened once.
So I'm putting West Virginia number 5. This is the Jayhawk Talk Power Rankings. You can take all of their power rankings and throw them in the garbage. Number 6, Iowa State. This is Roll Man Gino. Yeah, it may be a little high for Iowa State. I know. But they beat Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the best win of the bottom 5 of the Big 12. Best part about this game, 7 seconds left. Kirk Ferentz is trying to ice the kicker for Iowa State. Tied. He calls the timeout just as it snapped. You know, the old tricky play. And the kicker misses it, giving him a second shot. And, of course, he makes it. I kind of love it when that happens, although I would have preferred Iowa State to lose. So, Roll Man Gino on that one.
I don't want to talk about it. Just make it sad.
All right, number 7, TCU. I'm putting them at number 7 because I know nothing about TCU, but they beat Minnesota 30-7 at home. They have a quarterback, Trayvon Boykin, who did pretty well. Threw for 2 touchdowns, ran for 92. Who knows? We probably won't beat them. Number 8, Texas. Pretty low for Texas. They lost to UCLA 20-17. Funniest part about the game was the coin toss, Kevin.
Ugh.
Okay, so UCLA wins the coin toss, right?
Yeah.
They defer, so that means that they're going to get the ball in the second half.
Yep.
They get to choose in the second half. Texas, the captain, says they want to kick. And then they want to kick. This is Captain Tank Johnson saying we want to kick. And then the official turned off the microphone and explained that, okay, you're going to kick both the first half and second half, but they still decided to do it. Tank has come out on Twitter and apologized.
That is the ultimate piece of swag I have ever heard in a football stadium, where you go up and they're like, Matt, you know what? We'll kick to you twice.
We'll kick twice. You know, it limits your possessions and it's probably pretty stupid, but Texas does not have a whole lot of swagger to throw around, unfortunately, for them. Okay, number 9, Texas Tech lost to Arkansas at home 49-28, but this number 9 spot, I'm putting them, is the honorary spot of quote unquote team that KU fans will think they can beat, but in all reality have no shot at beating, unquote. Is that accurate?
I think that's accurate, but it is nice to see another team toiling in the bottom with us a little bit, struggling out of the gate. You know, there's a chance, Andrew.
Okay, and then number 10, obviously Kansas. Let's move on to Central Michigan. Kevin, what do you know about Central Michigan?
I know a little bit. I know they went into Purdue 2 weeks ago and beat the crap out of them, 38-17. But then they went to Syracuse this last week, and they got beat down in a very similar fashion that we did. They lost 40-3 to Syracuse. Looked very out of sorts in this game, very different from the game at Purdue. One of the reasons was they lost their stud senior running back, Thomas Rawls, who is also likely to be suspended for the KU game. He's facing several counts of, I don't know, all kinds of bad things. Apparently stealing purses and credit cards and all kinds of stuff. So that's good, at least. I mean, not for him, but hopefully for us. The bad part is a very big, strong, beefy, hard-nosed team is Central Michigan. Not what you would expect out of the MAC. It's not a team that, you know, is going to come in and play some gimmicky offense. They're going to be pretty tough. They're going to have a lot of 12 personnel and 22. They're going to try to beat you with 2 tight ends, running the ball down your throat. Their defensive line is also monstrous. They're going to sub in a lot of guys, keep it fresh. A pretty tough team, and a team that, KU on paper, you know, might struggle with, only because, you know, we don't have the same advantages up front against these guys that we might have against some other teams. They're really, you know, they're strong. They're big and strong. It will be very interesting to see how we scheme some things, hopefully get around some of that. I feel like, Andrew, after watching them at Syracuse, that we do have a decent chance to win this game. I have not seen the line. I have not seen it. You and I discussed it last week that we thought the game would end up a 10-15 point line. It opened up at 21.5 and got to 14. So let's set our line for the Central Michigan game. I'm going to ask you first, what do you think the line is, and what's your prediction?
Pick 'em.
Pick 'em.
Pick 'em, and I think we win by a field goal. There's some positivity, Kevin.
There it is. I honestly don't know what the line should be in this game. I think bettors are probably very confused. I'm going to take the home team, so I'm going to say KU by 2. And you know what? I'll take KU as well. Let's go with 30-25. There you go. That's my prediction.
I like it. I hope I like it.
Oh, man. This sucks. I freaking hate how bad we are. It makes it so hard to just be a fan and want to be really excited about going to watch the team. And I know everyone else feels the same way. And you can't blame people for not going to the games. But darn it, we're going to be there. We're going to be raising our beers high at halftime just along with everyone else outside the stadium, and hopefully we will have a good reason to go back inside because we'll be winning the game or hopefully close to it. Andrew, any closing thoughts before we get out of here?
I just want to tell Mr. Zanger that we are also monitoring the situation very closely, but I think it would be even worse if we didn't monitor it very closely. Yeah, I think that we're in trouble when we stop monitoring.
We need a baby monitor in the office.
But when we turn the monitor off, that's when you know.
That's the problem.
All right. So, Rock Chalk, let's beat the Chippewas.
All right. We'll catch you next time on the Jayhawk Talk podcast. Follow me at Jayhawk Talk. Follow Andrew at
Sherlock Hoops.
There he is. And we will catch you next time. Rock Chalk.
I tried to tell them every time we on the court. I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering. All them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering. 9 times get the cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild. Night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now. Yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap. March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the booster showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
Ah!
ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck J Hawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck J Hawk in your faces.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks,
this
baby.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my